We're learning Michtam Eliyahu. We started in the last class a new essay which is called Kuntras HaChesed, dealing with kindness and the nature of a person to be both a giver and a taker. So we mentioned in the last class that's the way Hashem created man, to be both giver and taker. The idea of being a taker is that he wants to draw to himself whatever he sees, he wants. We said like a baby, whatever he sees, he wants. He draws it, he pulls it to himself. So whatever he sees which appeals to him, those things that don't appeal to us, we don't see so much. We don't pay attention to them. But those things that we see that we like, so the person has an inclination to pull it to himself. And there are different levels, the different degrees of taking. So you have a person who's a thief, who robs other people, he steals from other people, a sneak thief, or you have a trickster who deceives people, who tricks people into giving them what he wants. And that's also different levels. At the national level, we spoke about war. Versus one country invades the other because they want, they desire their fields and their peoples and their industry and their wealth. So they will invade another nation and steal their wealth. And then at the individual level also, we have within society thieves, and then we have the whole of all of society's protections to try and set up legal systems, judicial systems to stop thieves, to discourage thieves, and also to educate the public that it's not in their interest to be thieves. And then at a much milder level, but still within the realm of takers, that those people who won't break any crimes, but they love taking, their focus is on taking. And therefore they're people who love gifts. They're just waiting to receive a gift or get something for nothing, get something for free, or to inherit, or to get charity. Right? This is what they look to. So that's also a type of taker. And these two forces, which we've been speaking about, taking and giving, are absolute. You know, there's nothing in between. A person is either a taker or he's a giver at a set moment. It could be another moment he'll be a giver. It could be 1 hour he's like this, the next hour he's like that. But there's nothing in between. You're either a person's in a taking mode where he's looking to take from others, or he's in a giving mode where he's looking to enrich others, to give to others. Now the question that was posed is, well, how does business, if people don't take, how does business work? How can a business work? The whole idea of business is that you're taking something. The reason I provide you with a service as a store is because I can get an income for myself. So I'm prepared to open a store, and I'm prepared to do business so that I can support my family. And in order to get this income, I will provide you with a service, or I'll provide you with goods. But it's all about taking and receiving. Surely the two go together. How can you have giving without taking, or taking without giving? How can you give and take? That's what business is called. Masav matan in Hebrew is give and take. So what do you mean? How can we survive without taking? How can it be that there's a society without taking? And he says, even so, you have two types of merchants. You have a merchant whose main focus is on taking. And therefore he looks to take the maximum and to give the minimum in return. If he can sell his goods at higher prices, and if he can sell lower quality goods, and if he can dupe the customers into all sorts of tricks to make them pay more. So that's one type of merchant who's looking purely to profit. He's looking purely to profit. He's really not interested in serving his customers. It's just a means. It's just a means. And therefore, even what he gives is not really giving. He gives and takes, but if he's just giving in order to take it. If he gives high quality goods, it's because he hopes to get more. And even if he gives lower prices, he gives cheap prices, he's hoping to make more business. So therefore, even when he does a discount store and he's giving very good prices and very good service and very good quality, so it's all with the hope of profiting. And because of that profit motive, he won't bother if he tramples on other people, because he's looking to take. So therefore, if he'll quash the competition, he'll destroy all the businesses in the neighborhood, that no one, everyone loses their finances. So he'll do it. Or if in order to make more profit, he'll throw 500 workers out into the streets, right? He can work out a way to automate his business. So now he just has all of these extra workers. He just fires them all. So he'll do that as well, because the profit motion, it's the taking motive that motivates him. So that's one type of merchant. What's the other type of merchant? So this is where we're picking up on page 34 in the Hebrew version of Michtam Liyah, volume 1. And he says as follows, Hamasa v'matan hatoiv, the good type. What's the good type of business? Aval eile heima darke hatzadikim shebibne adam. This is the way of the righteous amongst people. Like righteous people also have to eat. The bread doesn't fall from the heavens. So therefore we must make a certain shtablus. But there's the righteous way of doing it. There's the upright, the honest way of doing it. So the way of the righteous is nesinosim rabo netilosim muetis. Their giving is maximized and their taking is minimized. The little they do take, they take what they must take. In order that they should be continued to give and benefit others. Mosos nafsham. In other words, what they need to support themselves. So therefore you have a different type of merchant who's making a profit because he needs to support his family, but he's also looking to provide a real service, and he's looking to give satisfaction and joy to others. Those to his customers should also profit. It's what they call win-win. You should win as well. There's a type of I want my customers to also do well, and therefore he looks to be as fair as possible. Obviously, he has to profit in order to run his store, in order to feed his family, in order to feed himself, etc. But that's not his only motivation. He's looking to be a good person, essentially. Nimtzas oimer comes out. Ki gam netilosa mimekor kodesh yoso. So it comes out in this case of the good person, of the fair person, that even when he takes, that's a holy act. Even his act of taking becomes a holy act. Because he desires to give. So he'll take a profit because he wants to his store. He doesn't want his store to close down after a month. So he needs to take a profit. So he's taking, but it's in order that he should give. He's taking so that he can give. So that type of taking is giving. So therefore it's also a holy time. He's taking to give, so therefore his act of taking is an act of giving. He won't touch that which is evil. Where he wants to be a taker in and of itself. He's looking purely to be a taker. So such people won't touch this desire to take, to ravish other people. These are the holy ones in the world who cling to the attributes of the Creator in all of their interests. Now, Hashem is the ultimate giver. Hashem takes absolutely nothing from us. There's nothing we can possibly give him. He's a pure taker. So therefore, a person who aspires to the attributes of Hashem, so therefore he also looks to be a giver. And therefore he might be taking, but it's taking in order to give, and therefore he wants to be a pure giver to as much as he can, as much as he can train himself, as much as he can work himself into. What's a good? What's an example of good business? A good businessman. Havon is stuck of the Maisa Shnei Gdoile Ulam. Let's look at the deeds of two great individuals. Haechad min Hayoise Kedumi. One of them is going to be from the earliest history, of our earliest history. Vashei Nachrei Nachrei. One from the very most recent history. It's going to give us two examples of tzaddikim who were businessmen, but who were essentially they were givers and not takers. And in if we can use them as an example, as a model, don't know if we can exactly copy them, but we can have it as a, if you set an example for yourself, then you can aspire to be like so and so, right? As much as you, just like a person has his idol, person he models himself on, so therefore we can use these as models of how we should also act, we should try to be acting. If we will follow their path, then we'll never stumble. Okay, two examples. The first one, B'teira Kasut. In the Torah it's written, V'yishalech Chanoich es Ha'elukim. It says, Chanoich walked with Hashem. V'amu Chazal, that's what the verse is. He walked with Hashem. And say our sages, Chanoich Toifim min Alayim Hoyo. He used to stitch shoes. He was a shoemaker. That was his task. That was his job. And over every stitch that he made, he used to unifications with the Creator. What's the concept of making a unification? Something very lofty, Kabbalistic, making unifications. But it's, in truth, it's something we do every day, twice a day, when you recite the Shema. So you focus on the fact, you make a declaration, and you focus on the fact that Hashem is one. You say it's all Hashem. The entire world is Hashem, right? My neighborhood is Hashem, is Hashem. My family is Hashem. All the people I know is Hashem. Like the streets and the mountains and the skies, all Hashem. And I am Hashem. It's all Hashem. It's all one. It's only Hashem. So that's called making unification. By the way, it's one of the six constant mitzvahs. And there's any time that you think during the day, or if you just keep in the back of your mind the idea that Hashem is one, so therefore there you're fulfilling a positive mitzvah. This is a mitzvah that you can, this is a mitzvah that you can get credit for all of your waking hours, right? By focusing on the fact that Hashem is one. Just while we're mentioning it, there are six such mitzvahs. Anytime you think of these six, you have credit. The six quickly are, number one is to believe that Hashem is the creator of all and supervises all. And it's totally in His, according to His desire. As He wishes, so He does. That's number one. He's the creator of all, supervisor of all. That's number one. Mitzvah number one, to believe in Hashem. Believe in Hashem who took us out of Egypt, who takes care of us, etc. Number two, to believe that there are no other gods. There are no other forces in the world besides Hashem. That's a mitzvah. Number three, as we mentioned, is to unify Hashem. Hashem is all one. He's totally powerful. He's all powerful. He's in control of everything. Everything is really a part of Him. That's number three. Number four is to love Hashem. To love Hashem, if you focus on the fact that Hashem gives us our lives and He fills our lives with goodness. And even the unpleasant aspects of our lives are also for our benefit, because it's all to help us improve ourselves and to become better people for our benefit. So therefore it's all goodness, it's all love. He showers absolute love on us, and therefore we need to love Him in return. And when we do any act, any mitzvah, that's an act of love. Doing a mitzvah is an act of love. Learning Torah is an act of love. Not just like a young lady will read the letter for the fifth time that her husband sent her. So that's an act of love, right? So we learn the Torah, we read the Torah. It's a mitzvah to love Hashem. That's number four. Number five is a mitzvah to fear Hashem, to fear Him. There's a fear of being punished. This is the fear that He just might stop our lives. He can just remove us in a second, right? We have an awe. He's the big boss, and He gives us our lives. He gives us the air that we breathe. He gives us everything we have. So we should have a fear of Hashem. And the sixth one is not to follow our hearts and our eyes. Hearts is heretical thoughts. And to follow our eyes is to follow our lusts, to lust. You know, the person who lives a very lustful life, whether it's lusting for whatever it is he's lusting for, whether it's food or drink or luxurious living or fun times, etc. He's lustful, so therefore to control our eyes and heart that's mitzvah number six. Right? Okay, let's get back to this. It says about Chanoich that with every stitch that he sewed, whenever he sewed shoes, every stitch, he unified Hashem in upper and lower worlds. He created for himself the concept that Hashem is all one. Every stitch, Hashem is all one. That's what the Gemara says about Chanoch. V'shamati b'shem Rabbein Yisrael Misalant Tzal. Yisrael Salant explained this teaching. Shabia Hamaima Hazeh Biu Nechmad, he explained this very beautifully, and he said, V'yoyma, ki eina kavona shebashas tfiros hayadovek machshavois elyoynes. It doesn't mean that while he was sewing, he was thinking upper worlds, he was thinking Kabbalistic thoughts, and he was floating through the heavens, and he was meditating on the highest spheres. And that's not what it means, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Because that would be forbidden. That would be considered doing deceitful work. You're supposed to be creating shoes, and you're daydreaming, right? And you're floating through the heavens, so you know, you're totally distracted. That's not what you're being paid to do. You have to do conscientious work. You have to do a proper job. If you people are paying you to produce shoes, so they want to make sure that you sewed it properly. If you didn't sew it properly, the whole thing will fall apart after a few days. It wasn't properly stitched. So therefore, it can't mean that he was daydreaming in lofty thoughts while he was sewing shoes. That's not what it means. That's what it sounds like, but it can't be that that's what it means, because that's forbidden. It's forbidden to do such work. That's considered that's deceitful work. Right? It looks good on the outside, but it's very shoddy work. Right? How can a person turn his thoughts to something else? You have to be focused. If he's doing work for other people who are paying him for his work, so therefore he has to do it properly. So what does it mean that he was making unifications? What does this mean? The idea of the unifications he was making, he took it to heart, and he was focused on every stitch that he made, that the stitch should be good and strong. That's what it means. With every stitch he took, he was totally focused to make the best possible stitch. Because if you don't make it properly, you don't space it correctly, right, or you don't pull it tightly enough, whatever it is, right? There's law, right? There's the skill to stitching. So that he was totally focused that every single stitch should be the best possible stitch that he could make. It should be good. It should be strong. So that the shoes should come out very good, very well, very, very, very good quality. So that the customer who buys them should get pleasure from them. They should be good shoes, they should be comfortable shoes, they should last a long time, they shouldn't fall apart after a few weeks or a few months. And this is how Chanoch was clinging to the attributes of his Creator. That's what it means he was making unifications. He was doing it in the best possible way. In other words, he was being a total giver. I've been given this task to create these shoes, and he was doing it 100%. He was giving his 100% that it should be the best possible shoes. Now, normally, if you fix the price for the shoes, the customer doesn't know if you did. The customer doesn't see what's happening in the workroom, right? He orders shoes, and you say to him, come back next week, I'll have your shoes. Right? So what does he know what you were doing the whole week? Maybe you were lying in bed the whole week, right? Okay, or maybe you were working conscientiously. Maybe you did a shoddy job. Maybe you can't always see. You look on the outside, it looks fine, but you don't know. So therefore, that's what it means. He was clinging to the attribute of his Creator, who looks to bestow goodness and benefit to others. And this is what he means he was making unifications. He was aligning himself with the attributes of Hashem to do the best possible job that he could do. Right? An honest job, a real honest job. Chanoch did not desire anything else besides this one thing. Hashi'ifa miyuchedes ledavek b'midas koinoi. To strive and to aspire to cling to the attributes of his Creator. Notice he was totally focused on doing one thing only, and that was acting in the way Hashem would want him to act, acting with the attributes of Hashem. That if you do something, you do something with perfection. So that was his total focus, and in terms of that, he was making unifications. And also another idea that comes up together with this, Kedishma mikol shemetz ra. He avoided any type of evil. Even an error of deceiving the customer in any way, or cheating him in any way. In other words, there was this conscientious that he shouldn't make mistakes. If you make a mistake, so do it again, so undo the stitch and restitch it, do it properly. So this also he was conscientious of, so that he shouldn't be taking more than the value of the work that he was giving. And if he's being paid a certain amount to do certain work, so if you do less, let's say a person pays you for 5 hours work, but you only do 3 hours work, but you charge him for 5 hours, that's called theft. So therefore he was conscientious to give 100% value. And maybe just a little bit more, just to be on the safe side. So that's an example of giving. He was a craftsman, he was being paid for his wages, people bought the shoes, he wasn't doing it for nothing, but it was an act of giving. That's example number one. Example number two from more recent days, Hamaisa Sheini. The second example, the second story is Sakra Rabbeinu Yisrael Meir HaKoyen Zatzal. The second example is what they say over about Rabbi Yisrael Meir Baal Chofetz Chaim, the author of the great Sefer Chofetz Chaim. We know him as the Chofetz Chaim. Halo oid zachin eli roises atzadik hakodesh hazeh bederein. We also merited, this is Rav Dessler writing, we merited in our times to see this very holy tzaddik. Rav Dessler saw the Chofetz Chaim. He didn't want to have a livelihood from his Torah. He didn't want to work as a rov with a salary, whether it's as a rov or to get a stipend. So he said he'll be a storekeeper. He doesn't want to get panosa from Torah. So he opened a store. But what a storekeeper. Firstly, the merchandise he sold was the best quality. Not to deceive people. People shouldn't think they're getting good stuff when it's not good. So firstly, he sold the best quality. Hamida Kedusha. His weights, his measures were heaped. Right? He didn't, right? Because people shouldn't think they're getting so much and they're getting a bit less. So his measures were heaped. Hamishpal Kikhia Lelokeh Todi. His scales were always weighted slightly over into the favor of the customer. He didn't look to weigh it on to his benefit, but rather to his customer's benefit. Kavmuvan. And as we understand, Narue Love Kolakoini. The customers started streaming to his store. Right? Then they heard what a shopkeeper is. Wow. Right? So everyone was coming, the whole town was coming to buy from him. The Yomer Rabbein Yisrael Zatzal. So Yisrael Meir said, "In came the Meis Panos of Shachin Vonim. How will the other storekeepers have a panos? If I all the customers come to me, so what happens to all the other storekeepers in town?" So he made a rule, he's only going to open his store for 1 or 2 hours. So he said, okay, he's now from now on, he's only opening his store for whatever it was, from 10 to 11 in the morning, and that's it. Ad yavich ez afutas, so that he could profit a number of coins, dai panososa liyomer tzimtzum. And he worked it out, there should be enough panosa just for that day. That's also an attribute of tzaddikim, that you worry about today, you don't worry about tomorrow. And therefore we worked out how much does he need the store to be open to profit, how much so that he should support his family for that day. Viskeren achaken, and he would close it thereafter. So that was what he did. He says, okay, he's only opening it for a very short time each day. So that there should be a livelihood for other storekeepers as well. He shouldn't steal all the business in town. Well, that's already the opposite of the regular storekeeper. You want to look to maximize. You know, you see these stores, 24/6, right? We're open, 24 hours a day, 6 days a week, yeah? All right. He's born in Achakach. Afterwards, he rethought the whole thing. He said that this also wasn't working. Most of the customers also calculated their day to be at his store when he opens. So therefore they knew he was opening at 11 o'clock. At 11 o'clock there was the streets were full in front of his store. So he closed down completely. He said if that's the case, he's not going into business. He closed his store completely. And he's not going to be a storekeeper anymore. How's he going to live? Whatever. He says, Hashem doesn't want me to be this type of storekeeper who hurts other people. I'm such a storekeeper, it can't be that that's what Hashem wants from me, and therefore I'm not going to be a storekeeper. That's what he said. He didn't want to cause any other pain to other businessmen. So that's our second example. Also here, a person who's looking for panosa, but to do it in an upright way, in an honest way, and to pattern himself on the attributes of Hashem. V'omu Chazal, our sages have said, Godol hanena miyegia kapoi, yoyse miyorei shamayim. Greater is one who enjoys the toil of his hands than one who fears the heavens. A very surprising teaching. Again, it's a Gemara. Gemara says, greater is one who enjoys the toil of his hands more than one who fears the heaven. The question is, what does it mean? What does it mean, the one who enjoys the toil of his hands? What, someone who toils with his hands is better than one who fears Hashem, fears the heavens? So we have to still understand this. So he says like this, Hanene migia kapov, someone who enjoys the toil of his hands, hu ha'adam ham'ulo, this is a superior person, this is the best type of person, this is the person who desires and longs that his act of giving should be more than what he takes. What he gives should be more than what he takes. Ha'ish hazeh, such a person, he's guarding not to stumble. He doesn't want to be in a situation where it's any type of theft. He's very careful of theft. Example we mentioned before, if you're getting more than what you're giving, so in a sense it's a type of theft. So he's careful not to steal. Lo yispanis mi pri milus sichle v'nafsho, and therefore he doesn't want to make a livelihood from his intelligence or other superiority of his intelligence and of his self, of his charisma, of his character. He doesn't want to make panosa from that, the chokhma or beumnus, or with his wisdom or with his skills. He doesn't want to make such a panosa. There's a story of a king whose son was whatever it was choking or something. Whatever, they didn't know what to do. And they couldn't save him, and the kid was close to dying, and they didn't know how to. The local doctors didn't know what to do, so they called in this big expert. So the big expert came, and he put his finger in, and he went chick, and the something fell out, and he said, everything's fine. So they said, okay, thank you very much. How much do we owe you? He said 300 rubles. They said 300 rubles. It took you 2 seconds, the whole thing. 300 rubles. He says, well, actually, for my efforts, is 1 ruble. But for my knowledge and my wisdom as being the expert doctor in the land, and without me, this child could have died, you have to pay another 299 rubles. That's what happens. I mean, then you get a top heart surgeon, you know, you can charge you $10,000 for an operation, whatever, right? Or, I don't know what the prices are. It could be, it's probably more than that even. So therefore, he's making money out of his advanced knowledge. Right? He's cornered the market. Everyone needs him. So this, okay, it's maybe a little bit, we have to think about this a little bit more deeply, a little more carefully, what Rav Desler is saying here. But this is the desire of a person who doesn't want to be taking more than he gives. And if he does not want to make his livelihood from his superior training or his intelligence or his skills, because in all of these cases, he could be taking more than what he's giving. Right? Like that doctor, right? He charged 300 rubles. Maybe it's true you're allowed to ask for your skills, but only 200 rubles. You ask for 300, so you're a thief. Maybe, you know? And if no one else, he says, if he's the only guy in the market, he asks whatever he wants. People don't have an option. He's the only doctor. They'll pay him whatever he wants. They'll give him their life. They'll give him their life savings to save their lives. So therefore, you know, he's totally in control, and he has a temptation to take more than he deserves. So this is the fear of the person who wants to follow the attributes of Hashem. And if he's making business out of his skills and out of his knowledge, so therefore there is this real danger. And therefore he will prefer to earn his livelihood with the toil of his hands and the sweat of his brow. Hamalocha pshuta, simple work. Simple work, there's less of a chance of stealing from anyone. These are normally the jobs, the manual jobs, the very menial jobs, get the lowest salaries, but it's enough to live on. His main interest is to serve Hashem. He needs a few coins to support his family, to pay for whatever, to pay for or tuition, whatever it is, to feed his children, to dress his children. So he needs a certain amount, and that's what he needs. And more than that, he doesn't need. More than that, he doesn't want. He doesn't want to do any averas before, just to get his panos. So someone who does normal menial labor, normally the reality is that the toil is much more than the wages that he receives. You know, with menial work, people pay the minimum wages, and therefore normally they are giving much more than they are taking. So that's what it means, one who enjoys the toil of his hands. Now, as he looks to support himself from the toil of his hands, as opposed to more skilled type of labor. Now, we still haven't explained, Lama hu godol mi yirushamayim. Why should we say he's greater than one who fears heavens? That we still don't understand. What does it mean that one who toils with his hands, one who enjoys the toil of his hands, is greater than one who fears the heavens? What does part two mean? Greater than the one who fears the heavens. That we'll have to see. This we'll still explain further. From page 35, Perek Dalet. Ein odom bo'olam she'ein bo nitzutz koyach hanasin. We're starting something new, but we're going to get back to what we were saying before. The following idea is to be accepted, right? There's no person in this world who doesn't have within him a spark of a desire to give. Right? Every person has a certain desire, a certain pleasure, a certain need also to be a giver. There's no such thing as a person who's just a pure taker and he can never give. And the proof of this you see in when a person is rejoicing, when he's having good fortunes or good times. His best times, his happy times, cannot be perfect to him if he's alone. He can have tremendous celebration or tremendous success, but he's got no one to celebrate with. He's got no one to enjoy his success with him, right? He just won the lottery. But he doesn't know anyone. No one speaks to him. So obviously, that can't be his joy. He can't enjoy anything without sharing with others. Similarly, a person's need to be part of a group, or to have friends, to be part of a clique, part of a group of friends, which is also something from the depths of his soul. Each person needs is drawn to company. You can't be an outcast. We know this is the sign, this is the proof of it, that we know in a jail that to get solitary confinement, and when you put a prisoner in solitary confinement, that's considered the worst punishment. You take a prisoner and you say, okay, you've misbehaved and we're putting you all by yourself. So that is the very worst punishment. You separate a person from other individuals, so that's the worst punishment. I think I saw in one of the writings, one of the tzaddikim, maybe the Lev Eliyahu, that he was in exile in Russia, and he was running from place to place, and the police caught him and they threw him in a jail. And he spent a number of days in a jail, and he says he was in the jail cell with gypsies, Goyish gypsies. And he says that, Baruch Hashem, he had company. He was totally grateful to them for being, he wasn't alone. He had someone to talk to, another human being. Not even making it doesn't matter who they are or what they are. Just to have company is essential for a person, a necessity for a person. So where does this come from? What is this longing to be part of a group? The desire to give. Because when you're with other people, you give to them. You give them compliments. You talk to them. They speak. You listen. And you share with them, and you laugh at their jokes. All of this is acts of giving. We all need this. We all need to be givers. We all have a need within ourselves to give. Kol odom yisayv elabonim. Every person has a desire to have children. Every person wants children. The worst murderers also. You know, they want to have a family with kids. Yeah, okay. Nazis had children. You know, cute little children. So every person desires children. There are two ideas here. What's the desire? People have desire. Why should you want to have children? Right? It's an expense. It's a headache. It's getting up in the middle of the night. It's changing diapers. It's, you know, costs thousands and thousands of dollars. And education and whatever it is. Dentists and doctors and orthodontists. I mean, you know, who needs it, right? Just, you know, who needs children? But if you look at the world, everyone wants children. Everybody, every society, every people, they're all, of course I should have kids. Right? In China, they made a rule, certain, I don't know if it's still in the rule, but you only allowed one kid per family. It was terrible. People were almost going crazy there. So there are two ideas here. Number one, ki yagish is born of shuba hem shechatz musa. Why should a person want children? What's this desire to have children? So the first idea is, because a person feels that his children are an extension of his self. You know, he lives on through his children. He can live beyond this world through his children. He leaves the world, but he continues. He perpetuates what he's been doing. If you're doing something and you feel that's important, so you don't want to just stop. You're doing something good work. You don't want to just stop. And if you have children, they'll continue your good work, right? They'll continue your lifestyle and your life outlook. So you can give that over to your children, and that's, you live on through them. That's number one, idea number one. Number two, ki yagish tzorech becher sheloi es ashe yavenu yeitiv lo. And the second idea, why a person needs to have children, and I think this is the bigger idea, is that a person feels a need, a necessity, that he has someone to love and to bestow benefit on. He needs to give, and therefore only if he has a child, a helpless child, children, little babies can't do anything, you have to give them everything. But he'll have whom to give to. Right? And having whom to give to is chiyuni, it keeps him alive, it gives him a purpose to his life. He needs to give, and therefore a child is automatically becomes one, someone who he can give to. The child is dependent on him, and therefore he has to give him everything. So we find with people who are childless, they'll often bring orphans into, they'll adopt orphans, right? People who can't have children, they'll adopt an orphan. They'll adopt them fully. They'll be like children. They'll love them, and they'll give them absolutely everything. And sometimes adopted children are treated even better than normal children. Also, there are people, they can't adopt, but they'll bring a dog in. Right? You have a person living by himself, you bring in a dog, or you bring in some other cat, or whatever, a monkey, or a turkey, whatever it is. And you'll have someone to give to, you'll have someone to take care of. They'll take care of them like they would take care of their children. This also is a sign. So this need, this is the root of this need to be giving. Essentially, we're all creatures of Hashem. We've all been created Hashem. Hashem is the perfect giver. So it must be within our makeup. Right? In the way Hashem is made, we have those qualities. Hashem is a giver. So every single person has buried within the depths of the person himself or the personality a need and a desire and a will to give to others. That's in every single person. Kan shele yofe omedes lefanenu. Here we can ask a very nice question. Hein ha'ava v'anesina bo'es ka'achas. We find that love and the desire to give come together. Right? You love your children, you give to your children. You love your friends, you give them gifts. So we find normally that love and giving come together. Right? The love of others and the desire to give to them come together. The question is as follows. Interesting question. Now this is probably well known to us because this teaching of Rav Nesli is very famous. But here it is in the source. This is where it was asked, this question. And his question is as follows. Is it that giving is a offspring of love? Is it because he loves he gives? Or lehefer, or is it the opposite? Or do we say that love comes through giving? And what comes first, right? The chicken or the egg? Okay, obviously it was the chicken, yeah? Wasn't the egg, yeah? What comes first, the giving or the loving? Does giving result in loving, or does loving result in giving? It's a nice question. What leads to which? Does loving result? Okay, one leads to the other. Obviously, after you love a person, you give to him. You give to him, you love him. You love him, you give to him, etc., etc. But what starts it off? Does giving result in loving, or does loving result in giving?
The answer we will say, please God, in the next class.